Meredith did not exist before this episode. What they are about to describe is happening across Southwest as you listen. This is their story. In Exeter, NHS radiography training has stalled while hospitals run dangerously short-staffed and patients wait months for scans that could happen immediately. The work that keeps people alive sits undone not because the skills cannot be taught or the people cannot learn, but because someone in Westminster decided the government that issues the pound could not find enough of them.
I grew up watching my mother come home, exhausted from her shifts as a healthcare assistant at our local GP surgery in Crediton. She'd tell me about the chaos in the imaging department, how patients waited weeks for basic scans because they were so understaffed. When my grandfather needed regular monitoring during his cancer treatment, I saw it firsthand. The radiographers were brilliant, but there were never enough of them. They'd be rushing between machines, working through lunch, staying late every single night. I decided then that I wanted to be part of the solution. After studying biomedical sciences at Plymouth, I came home determined to train as a diagnostic radiographer. The need was obvious. Every conversation with healthcare workers confirmed it. The technology was advancing, the population was aging, and we needed people who could operate the scanners that catch cancer early, diagnose strokes, spot fractures. It felt like the most useful thing I could possibly do with my life. In 2022, I applied to Health Education England Southwest for a diagnostic radiography training place at the University of Exeter. The program was perfect for what I wanted to do. The university had invested in state-of-the-art facilities. I'd seen them during an open day, gleaming MRI machines, modern CT scanners, everything you'd need to train the next generation of radiographers. I was confident about my application. My grades were strong. I had healthcare experience, and I'd written a personal statement that came straight from the heart. The rejection letter arrived in March. The program had been suspended due to budget constraints from NHS England. They advised me to try again the following year when funding might be restored. I was disappointed, but not devastated. These things happen. Budgets are tight. I understood that. I spent the next year working as a healthcare assistant at Royal Devon University Healthcare NHS Foundation Trust. It was the perfect way to gain experience while waiting to reapply. But working in the hospital showed me something that didn't make sense. The radiographers I worked alongside were exhausted. They told me they were desperately short-staffed, working dangerous overtime, covering shifts they shouldn't have to cover. One senior radiographer, Sarah, said they were turning away patients because they simply couldn't cope with demand. "We need more people like you," she told me. "People who actually want to do this work." When applications opened again in 2023, I submitted mine immediately. I'd spent a year in the NHS. I'd seen the need up close. My personal statement was even stronger than before. This time, the rejection came faster. Health Education England told me exactly what they'd told me the year before. HM Treasury funding allocations don't allow us to commission new places. That phrase stuck with me. HM Treasury funding allocations don't allow us. It sounded so final, so beyond anyone's control, like a natural law. But something about it bothered me. I decided to dig deeper. I submitted a Freedom of Information request to the University of Exeter, asking about their radiography training capacity. The response was staggering. In 2023, the year I was told there was no funding, the University of Exeter's radiography department had 12 unfilled training places. 12. The state-of-the-art MRI and CT scanning sweets I'd seen on that open day, were sitting largely unused for teaching. The lecturers were there. The equipment was there. The clinical placement sites were available, but the students weren't allowed in. I started asking more questions. At Royal Devon, I learned that 3 qualified radiographers from overseas were working as porters because their credentials weren't being processed. Porters. These were people trained to operate complex diagnostic equipment, and they were moving beds around corridors because someone somewhere had decided their foreign qualifications couldn't be recognized quickly enough. Meanwhile, patients waited months for scans that could be done immediately if these radiographers were allowed to work in their actual profession. The contradiction was right there in front of me. Sarah, the senior radiographer who'd encouraged me to apply, worked next to empty training spaces every day. "There is no funding," she'd been told. When she asked why they couldn't take on more student radiographers, but I could see the equipment, I could see the space, I could see patients being turned away while qualified people worked in the wrong jobs and training places sat empty. That's when I started to understand something that no one had ever explained to me. When Health Education England told me HM Treasury funding allocations don't allow us to commission new places, they were talking as though HM Treasury was like a household trying to stretch a fixed budget, as though the government that issues the pound sterling could somehow run out of pounds, as though the people printing the money had looked in their wallet and found it empty. But the people existed. I existed. The 12 other people who could have filled those training places existed. The radiographers working as porters existed. The equipment existed. The lecturers existed. The hospitals that needed us existed. The patients waiting for scans existed. Everything required to connect the people to the training, to the work existed, except the political decision to fund it. The government that mints the coins and prints the notes told me it couldn't find enough of them to train the healthcare workers the NHS was crying out for. That wasn't an accounting problem. That was a choice dressed up as an impossibility. I'm still here, still working as a healthcare assistant, still watching the system strain under pressures that don't need to exist. But I hear those words differently now. When someone tells me there is no funding, I don't hear a statement of fact. I hear a political decision. The limit was never the money. The limit was the willingness to spend it into the training places that already existed for the people who are already there, ready to learn. I used to accept the excuse that there was no money. I hear it differently now. The government that prints the notes and mints the coins told me it could not find enough of them to train the people who were standing right there, ready to work. The real question was never about money. It was about whether the people existed, whether the skills could be taught, whether the materials were available. They were. All of them. The excuse was not a fact. It was a choice wrapped in the language of impossibility. It is the same logic as a household that says, we cannot afford it, except a household does not issue its own currency. The government does. The limit was never the money. The limit was the willingness to spend it into the places and the people who needed it. This isn't just my story. It's happening in every constituency where hospitals are understaffed while training places sit empty, where qualified people work in the wrong jobs while patients wait for care that could be delivered immediately. The resources exist. The people exist. What doesn't exist is the political will to connect them.
What Meredith experienced has a name. Fake experts. This technique relies on citing economists or commentators who treat the household budget analogy as self-evident, as though repeating it makes it true. For decades, tobacco companies used fake experts who insisted smoking was safe, selecting only those studies that supported their position while ignoring overwhelming evidence of harm. The technique works by lending authority to predetermined conclusions. In Meredith's case, the austerity objection was always the same. Economists say we cannot spend more on health without causing inflation. Which economists? The profession is divided. Many macroeconomists argue the binding constraint is real capacity, not currency. Economists say without naming them is an appeal to unnamed authority. When Health Education England told Meredith there was no funding, they were applying household logic to a currency issuer. They treated government spending as though it required finding money first, rather than recognizing that spending is how a government deploys resources. The fake expertise wasn't malicious, it was institutional. Entire departments had been trained to think the government budget worked like a household budget, and they genuinely believed it. The UK government issues its own currency. It does not need to find pounds before it spends them. The real constraint is resources. People, skills, materials, time. And in Meredith's constituency, those resources were sitting idle. The resources existed. The people existed. The decision not to connect them was political, not financial. Exeter ranks 357 out of 543 English constituencies in the English Indices of Deprivation 2025 from MHCLG. The constituency has 3,652 registered charities according to the Charity Commission Register for England and Wales. Total grants received were £19.5 million according to 360 Giving Grant Nav. All sources are published at blockedbritain.co.uk. Blocked Britain tells the stories of people whose lives are shaped by the gap between what Britain needs and what its institutions choose to provide. Every character is fictional. Every situation is drawn from official statistics, produced by Blocked Britain.